B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Kenny Wayne Shepherd's up first on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Of course, the pandemic. These guys haven't been able to hit the stage. How bad does he want to get back out and play live?
At the very first moment that somebody says, you guys can go out and play shows, and fans say, we'll be there, then, I mean, I'm on it.
We discuss a new live album, Straight to You Live, as well as working recently with Noah Hunt in Nashville and what they were doing. And how about Five Finger Death Punch, covering Blue on Black and making it a number one song again?
You know, as a songwriter, as a musician, that's the kind of stuff you hope to create is timeless music.
We talk about the recent passing of Eddie Van Halen, his other band, The Rides. And I'm a car guy, so I have to ask him about dream cars and if he has his.
We're in the process of restoring one right now, putting a Hellcat crate engine in it with like 707 horsepower.
Then it's bassist Matt McCloskey from Rev Theory. We talk about their upcoming album and some of the guest stars they've been working with.
I have a guest vocal and a co-write with Heidi the Butcher.
We talk about bass players, sports teams using Hell Yeah, as well as song use in the WWE and what that's meant to the band.
You know, we've had a good relationship with them. They've been huge supporters, and we've earned a lot of fans through that legacy.
And more with Matt McCloskey from Rev Theory, as well as Kenny Wayne Shepherd today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Welcome to another edition of Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. It's Meltdown here. Thank you so much for listening. Kenny Wayne Shepherd is up first today. Straight to You Live is the new live compilation he's got out right now. And it's really cool because we talk about the horn section there and how it kind of accents everything. What they were recently doing in Nashville, like I was mentioning in the intro, Eddie Van Halen. And, of course, I got to talk cars anytime I get a guy like Kenny Wayne Shepherd on. It's funny. I mentioned this in the interview with Kenny, but I talked with James Hetfield one time. And I said to James, I said, James, how many cars do you own? And here's what he said.
Yeah, probably, it sounds really stupid, but I've lost count. I'm sure the wife knows. She really knows.
What about motorcycles? Have you lost count of your motorcycles too?
I got less of those.
Just love that laugh from James. That is hysterical. James, by the way, one of my favorite people to talk to in this business. He is such a good dude. And I mean, one of the coolest rock stars ever, right? I'll fight you on that. Anyways, we'll talk to Kenny coming up here in just a second. Also, Matt McCloskey from Rev Theory. I've never talked to any of these guys before, but some pretty cool stuff. We talk about the WWE. The band is kind of going through some sort of transformation. We'll talk about that. That comes up here in just a little bit. We talk about bass lines, bass players, the whole thing. So in the meantime, Kenny Wayne Shepherd is up first. Had a chance to talk to Kenny Wayne Shepherd, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 times, perhaps more, not exactly sure. He was actually, I was thinking about this earlier, one of the last rock stars to come into the studio and actually do an interview in this very studio where I'm sitting right now. And it was last year. A lot of bands don't, you know, come into the studio much anymore. They kind of either do the phone thing or the Zoom thing, or they do it at the venue or whatever. But Kenny Wayne and Noah were actually, I don't know, they had a day off or something, so they came by the studio, which was pretty cool. In the meantime, Kenny joined us this time on the phone, and away we went with Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
How are you, brother?
I'm doing good, man. You got this new DVD and album and CD and the whole thing out, Straight to You Live. I guess the first question is, I guess, does the pandemic help in putting out a live album?
I don't know. I don't think it helps with very much, but I think that the timing of giving the fans something like this, which they've been asking for a long time, I think it's probably appropriate, you know, the most appropriate time, because they can't come see us in concert. So this is the next best thing, and they've been asking for it for decades, and so we finally have it to give to them.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what I meant. It's like, because you really can't do much right now, you just went back through some live stuff, and this show took place in overseas, like in France or Germany or something, right, last November?
Yeah, it was in Germany, and, you know, the whole European tour that we were doing at that time was pretty much sold out, so the band was hitting on all cylinders, and, you know, it was like a great performance, and we were fired up, and, you know, happy to be out on tour, and so, you know, it captured a great show, and it was a legendary is a concert series over there that's really prestigious that we had been asked to be a part of. So that's why the camera crew was there. And we've been recording the audio to our concerts every night for like several years now. So it all just kind of came together anyways. But I didn't really think at the time we'd be releasing it until all the touring started getting rescheduled and postponed or rescheduled. And I thought, you know, I mean, we have this great performance. We should probably make it available to these people.
Now, let me ask you two questions here. How much do you miss the stage? And secondly, you talk about recording all your shows. Now, sometimes I'll record some stuff. Like every podcast I record, I listen to back just to, you know, kind of critique myself. Do you listen to your stuff back?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, I go back. And, of course, I notice the mistakes. But, you know, I've also learned to live with the mistakes and just, like, because that keeps it real. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely go back and watch it and I critique it, you know, but I think ultimately this performance was definitely good enough to make the cut without a doubt.
Yeah. And how much do you miss the playing in the stages this year?
Well, dude, I mean, this is what we live to do. I mean, this is what I feel like I was born to do. I mean, I'm dying to get back out there, but it just doesn't work right now. So in the meantime, I've been really trying to enjoy and appreciate the time that I've been given to spend with my family, my wife and kids. And, you know, we've been making the best of that for sure. But I'm telling you, like, at the very first moment that somebody says, you guys can go out and play shows and the fans say, we'll be there, then, I mean, I'm on it. I can tell you that.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned, like, you know, you notice the mistakes and stuff. John Five is a friend of mine, and I said to him one time when he came off the stage, I said, I think you missed a note. He said, no, I didn't. Do you know John?
Yeah, I don't know him that well, but I met him a couple times.
Yeah.
I don't think he missed a note. That guy knows every note that there is to play, man.
Oh, my God. He's unbelievable. Yeah. I love the horn section on this record, too. I think it adds, like, a whole other flavor, a whole other side to it as well.
Yeah, you know, I've used horns here and there on certain songs over the years, and I've had horns come out for occasional shows every once in a while, but, you know, this is a more permanent situation. I brought them in and had them play on almost the whole album for the Traveler record, and then I knew that would force me to have to take them out on tour, and it's been a great addition to the band. I mean, for us, musically, it's been a great change. Those guys are on fire, and they add a whole new dimension to the band, but also for the fans. Like, we have people that have been seeing us for decades now and keep coming back, and so it gives them a new experience as well. So it's just been a great thing all around to have the horns.
Yeah, it does seem like, I guess, kind of a growth and in a kind of going in a not a different direction, but maybe in, well, maybe a little bit of a different direction. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you add players or instruments, it definitely affects the sound. It affects the dynamics, you know, and all that stuff. So I would say, you know, it definitely adds another layer, and it's been a really great one.
Now, I was down in Nashville at the end of October, and I saw that you were down there recently a couple of weeks ago. So can you talk about what you were doing?
Noah and I were in the studio. We were doing some, you know, stripped down versions of some songs for a couple of different outlets. And then I went in and I actually also was doing a guitar solo over a Christmas song. We recorded like 4 or 5 Christmas songs, like, I want to say like in 2011, 2010, like 10 years ago. We never actually, I was going to do a whole Christmas album, and then we just kind of stopped and never went any further with it. So I was going back and finishing up some of that stuff so that we could, you know, release it to the fans and give them some Christmas music to listen to. So, you know, it's just nice to be creative, nice to play guitar and have a reason to do it. You know?
Now, is there a timetable for when that's going to be available?
Well, I think we posted it up. I think it's either on our website or maybe you sign up for our free membership club,
okay,
which is called the 11 Club, and then maybe you get a link to it. I think, or maybe they're putting on, I don't know. My management's handling it. I think it's out there, or it's about to be out there so that people can stream it, listen to it, buy it, whatever you want to do.
Now, speaking of that, so obviously with the pandemic, people are locked down and kind of, you know, doing, you know, whatever. Are you working on new stuff for next year possibly?
Well, we actually got really lucky. We had been recording a new record right before all this stuff happened. So we had just put the finishing touches on the record at the beginning of March. And so the new album is done. We just don't know when it's going to be released because, you know, the whole point for us to release a new record is so that we can play the music in our concerts,
right,
and bring it to the people. So we have to kind of wait and see when the actual appropriate time is to release the new record. But we got one ready and ready to go. It's just in the wings waiting.
And just before you called, I was listening to some tracks off the record. I was listening to it this morning, too, at my house. But I just heard Blue on Black. Tell me about the new life that's taken on with the cover from Five Finger.
Yeah, you know, it's really been really fun. That was a lot of fun. I mean, it was really cool. I had a big hit with that song when I first wrote it and recorded it, released it. And then, you know, 20 years went by, and then it happened all over again. And those guys recorded it. Then we did another version where I played on it, and Brian May from Queen played on it, and Brantley Gilbert. And then we, you know, raised a bunch of money for first responders, and they released it as a single and went up to number one again. So, you know, it's just really cool. I knew that song was, you know, a great song when we wrote it. And had no idea the life that it would have, but it, you know, as a songwriter, as a musician, that's the kind of stuff you hope to create is timeless music.
Yeah, that is kind of wild to think that you've kind of created this number one song twice.
Yeah, that doesn't happen a lot, actually. That's a really rare thing, and so I feel very fortunate to have been able to experience that, for sure.
Now, Brian May, I was just telling my wife about this the other day before I even knew I was going to talk to you, but he doesn't use a guitar pick. He uses, like, some sort of English money or something, right?
I don't know what he uses. I mean, I know that for a long time, Eddie Van Halen was using a quarter, I think, or something like that. I'm not sure what Brian uses, but, you know, he's like a crazy engineer. He may have invented his own guitar pick.
I think he uses some sort of English coin or something that he's used. It's kind of like, I don't know, infamous with Brian May, but I was just curious if you'd ever tried anything like that.
I mean, I've tried things out of necessity. Like when I was a kid, I couldn't find a guitar pick, or I had worn them all out. So I would just pick up whatever. I've used everything from hotel room keys to quarters and nickels and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that.
So you just mentioned Eddie Van Halen. Of course, I got to ask you about Eddie. And if I'm not mistaken, did you open up the last Van Halen show that he played on?
Yeah, well, we were on the whole tour.
The whole tour,
okay. We did that entire tour together. Yeah. And, you know, man, look, he's an amazing guy. He was a revolutionary guy for the instrument. A game changer, one of a kind. I mean, he was a great friend to me. He was a really sweet person to me. He went out of his way to be very kind to me. I mean, I toured with him in the 90s, and then we did the last tour in 2015, and I saw him every day, and he always went out of his way to spend time with me and made me feel special. So, you know, a huge loss to the music community, and an even bigger loss to the people who loved him.
And you've probably heard Wolfgang's track, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, he, you know, I feel really happy for him, man. I mean, I'm glad that that's, you know, doing so well for him. And, I mean, he's a talented kid, and, you know, I wish him the best, man. I hope he has a great run with it.
Yeah, now that you mentioned that you were on a tour, I do remember that because I normally never do this. As a matter of fact, I've never done this before or after, but I actually went down with the photographers. You know how they gave you, like, the first three songs or something, right? And I went down in the photo pit, and they gave six songs for Van Halen. I'm like, Christ, I got to be down there to be right in front of Eddie Van Halen, you know, just because.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just such a legend, you know. So, so a couple more things here for you, Kenny. The Rides, what's going on with that right now?
Well, we were talking about doing another record and, you know, getting together and start writing an album, and then the pandemic hit. I mean, it's just like kind of put every single thing on hold, so... We'll see. I mean, Barry and Steven Stills and myself were all open to doing it. We all wanted to do it. It was just we were trying to find the opening in our schedules. And, you know, now everything's kind of been put on hold. So we'll see what happens.
So you got this live album out straight to you live like we were just talking about. What are some of your favorite live records?
Oh, man, I'm going to tell you what. My favorite, Frampton, obviously, you know, he had a great live album, but, you know, one of my favorite, it's a weird album. It's not 100% live. It's like half live and half studio. And it's a ZZ Top album called Fandango.
Okay.
And, it's amazing. Like, you know, the sounds, dude, the sound of Billy Gibbons, Les Paul on those live recordings is like, if you ever asked me, like, what is the perfect sounding Les Paul, like that is it right there. without a doubt. And so, you know, I think I don't remember how many tracks are on it. It's either 8 or 10, but like half of them are from live concert and the other half are like, you know, studio recordings, but it's a killer record.
That's great. Yeah. It's funny because I've told people before, no matter what room you're in, Billy Gibbons is always the coolest guy in the room.
Without a doubt. That's...
But that Frampton record, you're so funny because there's few songs I will sit in my car and listen to, but when Do You Feel Like We Do comes on, I have to listen to it, and I have to listen for the end when he pulls out of the voice box thing, and then it goes into the final like guitar jam, and I just love that song.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why that was such a great record and sold so many copies, without a doubt. I mean, there's a lot of great live albums out there. I mean, and especially if I want to get into the blues realm, there's like an Albert King album called Live Wire Blues Power. If you're a blues fan, like that's a killer live blues record.
Now, I don't get to talk cars with many rockers, so indulge me for a few minutes, but what other rockers do you talk cars with? I know I've asked James Hetfield before, like, how many cars he owns, and he doesn't even know how many cars he has, but is there other guys that we might not know about that are big car guys like yourself?
I mean, most guitar guys, most legit guitar guys are car guys as well, but, like, Jimmy Vaughn is a huge car guy, Billy Gibbons, obviously, Jeff Beck is a big one, and Clapton, you know, the list goes on and on without a doubt. So, I mean, I'll talk cars with anybody who wants to talk about them, frankly. They don't have to be a guitar player. I mean, if you like cars, then we have common ground.
Well, when I came here to Detroit 25 years ago, I think I've told you about this before, but I'm a big three guy, and it's like that's where they build the cars. So you're kind of a – do you have any cars outside of Mopars, like as far as, you know, muscle cars and stuff go?
Yeah, I mean, look, I like everything. You know, like just the other day – there was an IROC Camaro, which, you know, back in the 80s,
yeah, for sure,
they looked great. They looked great, but they were not fast. But this car has like 6,000 original miles on it. So scoop that up. You know, so, I mean, I love American muscle cars. And I love, you know, anything that looks good and goes fast. You know, I'm a fan of it. But you know, American iron really resonates with me for sure.
Yeah, that makes two of us. So do you own your like dream car and your dream guitar, or is it still out there somewhere?
Well, so it's an evolving thing. When you're a car guy, it evolves.
Right.
So, like, you have a goal, you have a dream car, and then if you accomplish that, then it's on to the next one, right? So right now, for the longest time, my dream car was to build a 1970 Barracuda convertible. So we're in the process of restoring one right now and putting the Hellcat crate engine in it with like 707 horsepower. And so once that is realized and that is accomplished, then, you know, I'm sure it'll be on to the next one. But that was on my radar for a long time, and I'm really excited to get that one done.
That is so kick-ass. Those Barracudas are so killer, man. All right, last thing here for you. Outside of the General Lee, which I know you own one of, at least a replica of, what is your favorite, like, TV or movie car if you could buy one?
Well, I would say Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, I was born in 1977. I grew up with the Dukes of Hazzard and Smokey and the Bandit, and even Knight Rider, you know, like the Trans Am from that show is pretty cool. But probably Smokey and the Bandit is like, or you know what's really become popular now is like the Ferrari from Magnum P.I.,
yeah.
The 308. Like, I remember, like, nobody – that was, like, the cheap – if you wanted to have a Ferrari on the cheap, that was the one you could, like, you know, get into having a Ferrari for little money. And then now those things have, like, doubled in value over the last several years. So you see a lot of those nowadays. But, you know, the 80s era TV car stars are the ones that I resonate with. And, you know, the second runner-up from the General Lee for me would be the Trans Am from Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, I had one of those 77 Trans Ams growing up with the 400. I had a shift kit put in. I mean, that thing was so kick-ass, a shaker hood scoop and the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, man. They couldn't really make them go fast, so they just put a lot of stickers on them. And, they made them look fast.
Mine went fast. I beat three Mustangs. I'll never forget. Two of them on the drag strip and one of them on the street. And they never, I just never lost to a Mustang, which is, I guess, part of the goal sometimes in life. So,
well, that's a big accomplishment, especially like just back in the 80s, they came out with those 5.0 Mustangs. And those, you know, were pretty hot little cars back in those days, you know. And they sounded really good. I remember there was like a Louisiana state trooper that lived in my neighborhood that had one. And I used to love hearing that guy fire that thing up.
Yeah, well, they didn't hold a match to my 6.6 TA, you know.
All right. Yeah, man.
All right, Kenny. Well, listen, dude, thanks for the time. Straight to You Live is out. And, of course, we'll look for some Christmas music and maybe you see you back on stage in 2021.
All right, man. I hope so. And, you know, thanks for having me on the show. And, you know, hopefully we'll see you and the listeners at a venue at some point in the near future.
All right, Kenny. Appreciate the time, man. Have a great holiday, okay?
Thanks, brother. You too.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Up next, it's Matt from the band Rev Theory. They got a bunch of stuff in the works, kind of revamping the band a little bit. Like I said in the intro, talk about songs used in the WWE. This always interests me because, the vast, swath of fans that the WWE has all over the planet is really a push for some of these bands, as Matt will talk about coming up here in just a bit. We talk about his, the best live band he's ever seen. And a ton more today. It's Matt from Rev Theory as we were joined on the phone and away we went. Hey, first of all, thanks for taking the time. How's things, man?
Good, good. And thank you on our end. Appreciate you supporting us and having me on today.
Yeah, no problem. So what's going on in the world of Rev Theory here? Tell us what you can tell us.
We've gone through a lot of changes recently and we kind of changed the reins here. Julian and myself took the lead. We've been kind of the lead songwriters for a long time, and Rich, our former lead singer, kind of dipped out. And we had gotten into production and had written and recorded a bunch of songs. And last year we came together and we were like, hey, we have all this music, like, let's put it out. So we began releasing stuff kind of under the radar, and then, you know, people were really digging it. So we decided to give it a push and went full steam with the Remember Me. It's kind of like a transitional from the old guard to the new guard, and kind of bridging the gap between where we kind of want to go musically and where we were formerly. So that's what this song is. And then we're planning to release more music and kind of like take it in a whole new direction and take some chances and experiment a lot on our musical direction.
Now, are you going to be releasing a full-blown album, or are you just releasing tracks here and there?
So we're going to be releasing a full album sometime next year. We haven't set a date yet. We have almost an album's worth of music ready. But we're going to release stuff slowly and then culminate with a full release and hopefully do like a vinyl pressing and really cool artwork that we've been developing with some different artists that we just dig and collaborate with. So it's all moving forward. We wanted to make it all about the art and collaborating with different artists and musicians and video producers and just doing really cool stuff that we dig and we love and hopefully other people will as well.
Yeah. So you just talked about like, you know, changes in the band and stuff. How much did that set you back? Like talk about like, you know, the changing, I mean, obviously you've been in the band since the beginning. So just talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, like a lot of bands, you know, there's sometimes you have tumultuous relationships and, you know, Rich was always kind of on his own path, and Julian and I were always the main songwriters, and we gave the band the musical direction, and we were behind a lot of that creation, and we were the main creative force. So, a few years back, we released an album with Rich on it, and he was kind of like in, we had a handshake agreement with the label that he was going to go out and support and tour and do all that stuff that comes along with releasing an album. And last minute, he decided to pull the plug on that. And at that point, we kind of parted ways. Julian and I had a little bit of a falling out and went our separate directions. And he was dealing with some of his own personal issues and some physical stuff. And he ended up going back to Vancouver, Canada, where he's originally from. And We hadn't actually spoken in a while, and then he hit me up and he's like, dude, we have all this amazing music, and like, I've been reaching out to the fan base and they want to hear more stuff. And we kind of put our differences aside and decided to give it a shot and put some of the music out and just see how people would react. And it's been really positive. So that's kind of how it went down. That's the long and short of it. But yeah, I mean, we're all cool with each other. Like, there's no like bad blood or anything. It was just like, you know, people have their different paths, and this is our path.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I've never been in a band, and I'm just kind of, you know, I fly solo. I don't have like, you know, a radio partner or nothing like that. But people tend to forget that, you know.
Must be nice.
Yeah, right. Exactly. People tend to forget that, you know, when you guys are on the road constantly, and maybe, for example, you're not getting the success you think you should get, or maybe you're getting too much success, and, you know, that starts to like pull people apart.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things. Like, some people let it get to their head, and some people are more humble than others. And I like to think of myself as pretty grounded, whereas some people, you know, you can see their personalities start to shift a little bit. But, you know, I feel like as a whole, we're a pretty humble group. But, you know, we had this guitar player, Ricky Licks, and, you know, he kind of went his own way, and we ended up parting ways with him because he just wasn't really fitting with our ideals, and you know, we meant the best for him, but, you know, things just sometimes they just don't work out, unfortunately.
Now, who makes up the band right now?
So it's obviously myself and Julian. We have some buddies that we've been playing with in LA that we were playing with before kind of, you know, we disbanded. So we'll probably bring some of those guys back in. But, you know, we also have some other people in mind as potential bandmates for the new lineup. So we're not going to announce anything yet, but, you know, we have a few really awesome musicians in mind.
Okay. All right, so you're going to keep us in suspense. I got it. So
yeah. You just kind of have to wait and see. You know, we got to keep it mysterious.
Yeah, so you got all this music. How many songs do you have written right now that we haven't heard?
I mean, we have probably an album's worth written, you know, probably 10 or 11 songs. Whether those songs will make the final cut, because I'm still working on stuff. Julian has a bunch of ideas, so we're still kind of collaborating on different things. And we also want to work with some other artists that we're friends with. We've had some really good success with our buddy V from Violent Idols. He does really cool stuff. So I'm planning to take a trip to Vegas to work with him a little bit. He actually just had some, I think he got a Grammy nomination within this moment. I just talked to him the other day. So I plan to work with him some more. We have some stuff with Brandon Soller from Atreyu that we're getting ready to release at some point. And I have a guest vocal and a co-write with Heidi the Butcher.
Oh, really?
So we're kind of, yeah. She's we became friends with her and did some co-writing in LA for one of their albums. And I was like, hey, I got this really cool song, and, you know, we'd love you to, you know, do a guest vocal on it. And she killed it and actually wrote the second verse, and it came out really cool. So we're excited for that one. It's definitely a little heavier than most of the stuff we released, but, you know, like I said, we're taking some chances. We have some heavier stuff. We have some way lighter stuff too. That's really cool and kind of like ethereal and spacey sounding. So, you know, really, really cool stuff. We're just trying to, you know, hit all the switches with the different genres that we love and things that we're inspired by.
Yeah. Carla, by the way, is from here.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's from Southfield out here in Michigan. But, yeah, Heidi, I don't know if I ever met Heidi, to tell you the truth now. But, yeah, Butcher Babies, of course, they're pretty heavy. And you say that, yeah, that could be a little bit heavier for what you guys do. And then it's funny because you just mentioned something that, you know, maybe some softer stuff and some spacier stuff, because that's really not in your wheelhouse either. And you guys are kind of experimenting a little bit with that too, eh?
Yeah, well, you know, I can do the heavier vocals, but I also have the depth to be able to do some more kind of like high, lofty, soaring type stuff. So, you know, we figured we'd venture into that world. And Julian and I are big fans of like electronic music and some definitely like out there, more spacey, artistic, just real experimental stuff. And
you know, that's the type of stuff that we like to listen to sometimes, you know, just chilling out and, you know, going up into the mountains and taking a trip and, you know, just seeing where our minds take us.
That's right. So Paul Phillips tours with you guys. Is that the Paul Phillips from Puddle of Mud?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he spent some time touring with us. You know, he kind of also went his own way when we kind of disbanded.
Right, right.
He had been a friend of ours. He just kind of was in the mix. We became friends with a bunch of people from Jacksonville and like Danny Wimmer and that whole crew.
Yeah.
And that's how we met Ricky Licks as well. Like he was part of that kind of entourage and, you know, Paul was just a homie and we were looking for someone to play some shows with and he was down and he's a good dude and we had a lot of fun with him. So
yeah, that's cool.
I don't know that he'll continue on with us as we put together our touring lineup, but, you know, he'd definitely be in the running.
I just wasn't sure if that was the same one because it's been a while since I've heard that name, and I'm like, that sounds like the dude from Puddle. It's
yeah.
Like, you know, I haven't seen him in a while, so.
yeah, he's a homie, so, you know, we had some fun touring with him. He's a good guy, like I said, so.
Yeah, the Jacksonville guys, the Shinedown guys and all them down there, too, so.
Yeah, yep.
So you told me before we started, you're from Philadelphia. Where's the rest of the band from? Because aren't you guys basically a Northeastern band?
Yeah, so I'm from Philadelphia. Rich is from North Jersey, right outside of Manhattan, and Dave is from outside Boston. So we're kind of a Northeast crew. Julian, of course, is the oddball. He's from the West Coast of Canada. But those three guys went to college together outside of Boston.
Oh, okay.
And that's kind of where the inception of the band, you know, happened. And then I met them a few years later in New York, and that's where we finalize the lineup for Rev.
Now, speaking of Canada, I know that Hell Yeah gets a lot of play like in hockey arenas and stuff, and I'm not mistaken, it's the Oilers use it still to this day, right?
Yeah, and the Red Wings used it when they won the Stanley Cup.
Did
so,
they?
Yeah, we've had a lot of... Yeah.
In 2008,
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of love from the NHL and a lot of those teams, and yeah, some of the Canadian teams still play it, and they come out on the ice, so... That's been really cool. I'll also get hit up by friends. Well, obviously not this year, but friends that are at like a ball game or a football game or whatever. And they're like, hey, your song's playing. And they'll like send me a clip. So that's pretty cool.
Now you've had to have been in arenas before where your song's played, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wait.
That's cool.
I recognize that. Yeah. Yeah. That's always a fun one.
Yeah. And then of course, talk about your relationship in the past with the WWE.
Yeah, WWE was, you know, kind of always a good staple for us. They supported us a lot through those years of like the Hell Yeah, Light It Up, and then they asked us to do Randy Orton's theme song. So, you know, we've had a good relationship with them. They've been huge supporters, and we've earned a lot of fans through that legacy. And we've gotten to go to a lot of events, and we even played the. I think it was the 40th anniversary of WrestleMania, which was really cool. Because at that event, all the old heads were there, like all the classics, and so we got to meet a lot of those guys, which was pretty rad. But yeah,
I was thinking to myself, it's too bad that you guys didn't write Hell Yeah about 10 years earlier. It could have been Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme song.
Yeah, right.
But I just thought about that, you know, as you were talking. But yeah, so I mean, you know, a lot of bands. I mean, that's got to be a huge push when you're on the WWE, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're massive worldwide. So like, I had no idea how like, you know, it's big here, but I mean, they're internationally just massive. So you don't realize. So well, you know, that's obviously tapping into a huge fan base and. You know, there's not to this day a post that we put up where someone doesn't comment voices.
Yeah.
You know, which is Randy Orton's theme song. It's like voices. And it's like, okay.
No, that is cool. Now, I've kind of lost touch with it a little bit. Is he still using that as his theme song?
I think so. Honestly, I don't really follow it to this point, so I'm not sure. I assume he's using it, but yeah, I haven't been really up to date on their
their events. So.
As long as you walk to the mailbox and get that check, that's then you know he's using it, right?
right. Yeah. There you go.
No, that's awesome. So since you're a bass player, I'll just throw this one out at you: Chris Squire or Geddy Lee. What do you think?
Oh man, Geddy Lee is just. I think he's so. I mean, his diverse talents and that high range and his bass playing skills. I gotta go.
You got to go with Geddy Lee, yeah. So what other kind of bass? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just think he, besides just being a bass player, I mean, he's so incredibly talented, like insane.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, his singing and everything else. But being a bass player, like what kind of guys influenced you?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing a lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers, Rage Against the Machine, you know, those were some of my earlier influences as a bass player.
Is that what made you want to pick up a bass?
Honestly, it was more circumstantial, the reason I picked up a bass. I had been a vocalist, you know, from my childhood. And, you know, I had dabbled with some percussion and saxophone was like one of my first instruments. And then my dad was a drummer, but he kind of retired the drums when he started a family. And he ended up picking up a bass, but it just kind of sat around collecting dust. So when I was about 12, I said, "Hey, can I play that?" And he's like, "Yeah, go for it." So I took a few lessons and just learned, picked it up and just played songs that I was digging at the time, whether it was like Red Hot Chili Peppers, Rage Against the Machine, Weezer, just kind of like whatever I was digging at that point in my life. And I just stayed with it. And actually probably some Rush too was in there. So
Yeah. Growing up in Philly, I'm sure you've heard your fair share of Rush, I guess.
Yeah. And I also my mom was a big Police fan, so Sting was definitely an influence, you know, as not only a bass player but a vocalist. So, you know, I always dig those bass player vocal combos.
You know, I always liked, I shouldn't say I always liked the Police. I got back into them about 4 or 5 years ago, but it's like each of their records has like great songs on it. Then there's one song that just sucks. Each of their records has the same thing.
Like, wait, what? Kind of went off the rails here. What's this?
I know. And it's like, come on, man. All the rest of the songs are like eights and nines. This one's like a two.
Yeah. Can't win them all.
No, I guess you can. Hey, so I'm just going to throw some stuff out at you. What's the best live band you ever saw?
Oh, man. Dang, that's tough. I mean, there's bands that I love that, like, I would go to shows, and I just, it's amazing just because I love the band, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, man, one that sticks in my memory was, so I became a huge fan of Refused at the end of my high school days and into college, and they kind of disbanded and weren't touring. So, I mean, I listened to their music for 15 years and then they decided to go on tour again. And me and one of my best buddies who actually, we started our first band together in high school. We were living in LA and he's like, "Hey, they're coming to LA." And, I was like, "No way. Like, we have to go." And it was one of the most incredible shows because, you know, you've been listening to their songs for, you know, 15 years and you've never seen them play. And it was just like, it was a bunch of dudes and all heads like in our kind of like age demographic that mm-hmm. had been like, you know, chomping at the bit to see these guys play. And it was just like the energy in the room was insane and they fucking killed it. And man, it was awesome. So good.
Now you guys have played a bunch of festival dates and stuff too. So you must have stood on the side of the stage or out in the crowd or whatever and watched some of your heroes play up on the stages, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Because you mentioned Danny Definitely. Wimmer before. I mean, you know, obviously if you're friends with Danny Wimmer, you must have played a bunch of festivals.
Oh, yeah. We played a lot of those big festivals. And, you know, I got to see Stone Temple Pilots side stage, which, you know, was amazing. Korn and just so many good artists. Audioslave.
Yeah.
Not to date all these guys that we've lost, but incredible shows and opportunities to see them.
Yeah, and you mentioned Korn. Yeah, I saw Korn at Rock on the Range, and Ray Lazier, the drummer, is like a friggin' machine.
Oh, yeah, so good. Oh, they're awesome live. Like, it's funny. Like, I dug Korn growing up, and to this day, like, I still, like, respect and dig them. But when I saw them live, like, it blew my mind. You know, it's like certain bands, like, okay, I like those guys, but then you see them live and you're just like, what the hell? This is incredible. And I don't know. It's just something about their energy, and they just look so cool up there. It's like, all right, I get it. This is rad.
I had the same vibe when I at Rock on the Range around 2015. I watched Slayer from the side of the stage, and I've never seen something so intense in my whole life.
Yeah. I saw that too. I think it was at that same show.
Oh my God. It was unbelievable. I saw those guys. And look, I've been to a lot of concerts in the Slayer and Metallica and Megadeth. I've been at Pantera, all the heavy shows, right? But it's like something about that, man. It's just those four guys up on stage just emanating such power, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a good one for me. What's the first bass line that comes to mind that you think that you wish you would have written?
Dang, first baseline. Wow, that's a tough one.
I'll help you out. How about No More Tears?
No More Tears? Yeah, I always freeze up when I get questions like this because there's so much good stuff out there. And it's like, oh, man, I don't even know. One of my favorite ones is the Higher Ground.
Higher Ground, yeah, for sure.
Oh, man.
I mean, Flea is ridiculous.
Stevie Wonder. Yeah, I mean, Flea's version, but yeah, like Stevie Wonder. Damn, man, so good.
Oh, the original one, okay.
Yeah, but no, Flea's version was the version I learned.
Right.
And I was probably, you know, like in middle school or something, and I was like slapping, was like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Well, it's one of those things like, you know, James Jamerson from Motown.
Yeah.
Do you know about him?
James Jamerson?
Yeah. Yeah, he's
not
like,
familiar.
Okay, so he was a Motown bass player. And
okay.
If you talk to like Robert DeLeo or some of these guys, that's like, he's like the king.
Yeah. Oh, Robert DeLeo is so good too.
Yeah, and so he was a big fan of James. Right. And then over the summer with this pandemic.
Right now.
What's that? You're looking him up, yeah. Over the summer with this pandemic, I watched that that Jaco Pastorius documentary. I never really knew about him either.
Oh yeah, someone recommended that to me. I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah, so there you go.
Really
see,
good,
you're
huh?
you're learning all sorts of new stuff by talking to old guys like me.
There you go. I love it.
Well, listen, man, we'll let you cut loose here and you know, move on with things. So tell me in 2021, do you guys have anything planned yet or moving forward or just kind of going to wait to see what happens?
I mean, you know, it's tough to predict what's going to happen, you know,
right.
given the past year. And we are looking at touring and we just signed on with a European booking agent. So we're looking to break some ground in Europe because we feel like that's an untapped market. And then, you know, obviously that'll probably translate to doing US dates as well. So we're definitely gearing up for this album release, hopefully by summer. And we're really excited to release a full piece of work all in under one, you know, album. So it's exciting times. And, you know, hopefully if things go well and the world opens back up, we'll be out hitting the road.
Well, listen, man, it's been great talking to you. Look up James Jamerson there and see what he's all about. And I'll quiz you next time.
Okay, yeah, I'll dig into it. So I'll be ready.
And there he is, Matt from Rev Theory. Got to thank him for taking the time to talk with us, as well as KWS, Kenny Wayne Shepherd. It's kind of cool. I never get a chance really to talk to rock stars about their cars, and he's kind of like a car buff, you know, and as you heard, but it's really cool to talk to him about that. I was just down in Nashville, like I may have mentioned, about a month ago or so, hanging out with Kid Rock, and he's got a bunch of cool cars as well. So, some of these guys, you know, they got a few extra bucks in their pocket, and they like to buy some high-powered automobiles. And, well, quite frankly, I'd be the same way. Anyways, thanks so much for joining me. We've got a few more episodes here before the break for 2020. And hopefully we start off 2021 in a bang and have a much better year for everybody. But as always, thank you so much for listening. And we'll do it all over again real soon. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.